Our scripture readings come from Hosea chapter 11 verses 3 through 4 and from Isaiah chapter 49 verse 15 and 66:13. From Isaiah chapter 49 we read, "Can a woman forget her nursing child or show no compassion for the child of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I will not forget you, I your mother." And from Isaiah chapter 66, verse 13. "As a mother comforts her child, so I will comfort you. You shall be comforted in Jerusalem." And Hosea chapter 11, verses 3 through 4. In this passage, it's God who's speaking. "Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them up in my arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with leading strings of human kindness, with bands of love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheeks. I bent down to them and fed them." These are our sacred stories.
On this Mother's Day, with your indulgence, I give you my Earth Day proclamation. In preparation for Earth Day, I got to thinking about why we call Earth Mother Earth. Mother Earth is an ancient construct and prevalent in many cultures worldwide. She's been worshipped and revered as both loving and temperamental, giving and vengeful. No longer idolized, Mother Earth is a deity in name only. We exploit and devalue her just the way we do human women. We glorify and demonize our Mother Earth with reproductive language like fertile earth or barren soil, making what she can produce and reproduce for us her only value. We ignore the fact that she's our home. And home isn't just how you feel about someplace, but how you treat it as well. There are perks to jet lag, not many, but some days, Father Time is on your side and you naturally awake with the sunrise. It had become our habit that April to rise before the sun and walk the short distance to the shore and sit in the early dim to witness the first rays of light stream across the Pacific of Waimanalo. This morning was not unlike any other days that month. It was hot and balmy, and the humidity in the air hinted at an afternoon thunderstorm that was surely to come, just as it had the day before. We'd gotten up early and were ready to head to the state park for the Earth Day beach cleanup. It was only a short walk from where we were staying, but I wasn't entirely sure of where we were going. This is a common theme in my life. I've signed us up for something, and then we have to figure it out along the way. We saw the crowd of locals gathering and joined the lines for our commemorative t-shirts, our assignments for the day, and water bottle refill stations. After a few short announcements, we headed down the sandy beach with bags and window-sized sifters, tools, and several hundred other volunteers. The kids were slathered in sunscreen and warned to check in periodically, and they wandered away with the assurance that they would be in good company to help out down the beach. I ended up joining a couple from Lanikai, taking turns holding a large sifter and combing up and scooping up the sand to get out every last piece of plastic and trash that we could get into our bag. After about an hour or so, we'd cleaned up about a 10 by 10 size piece of the beach and filled a huge bag of trash. And I went in search of my two children, both of whom had forgotten to check in with me. they'd joined some college kids down the beach who were digging out ghost nets from the wet and heavy sand that had balled up the size of a VW bug. They were using knives and cutting the nets, and we were putting them into a bag that would be hauled away later to the incinerator. The beach was a mess from a storm that had hit the island the week before, and the famously blue water was brown with runoff topsoil. But by the end of the day, the sand was clean and beautiful again. During our day of work, we were asked time and time again, "Where on the island do you live?" "We don't live on the island." "Then why are you here?" We would answer, "Because it's our beach too, and we love it." I don't know about any of you, but where are you from is a dreaded question for us. The answer can be very complicated. I'm often just saying things like, "The States." But here in the U.S., should I say the place where I was born or went to school, married, or flew in from most recently? It's difficult to explain our unusual way of life. To us, home is in many different places. Laura asked me to speak on Earth Day Sunday because I've seen so much of the world. But in this church, that's not really much of a distinction, except perhaps for the fact that as I've traveled, I've lived in many different places for several weeks or months at a time. I've gotten mail there, and I've had library cards and library fines. Sometimes had a bank account, paid taxes, had health insurance, and celebrated birthdays and holidays all on the road. There's a tremendous privilege to travel, one that I take too lightly most days. Most people have family or financial commitments or limitations that keep them from traveling away from their home, like we have over the years for work. When we go to Bayreuth this summer, we'll get bikes right away, and Emma will meet up with her friend at the Schwimmbad, and Lewis will want to get pizza at Studentenwald, and Ryan and I will go to Herzlkeller for a proper German beer. New York City is another home for us. I always take the kids to Central Park to see where their dad and I were married. We'll meet up with friends at the Queen's Hall of Science and spend hours and hours at the public library. Sometimes trying to make a home on the road means we end up in unexpected adventures, like in the Bukhansan National Park outside of Seoul, Korea. Hiking is a national pastime in Korea, and everyone is outfitted properly with boots and trekking poles, the whole nine yards. Huge extended families hike together with baskets of food and wine, and they have these long picnics on the mountainside where they sing songs together and sometimes take a nap. We were the only foreigners in sight, and none of the signs were in English, and our Korean was limited to 안녕하세요 and 감사합니다, hello and thank you. Not having the first clue of where we were headed, we picked a trail and started up. The path grew steeper and steeper, finally requiring ropes and ladders. Unlike the locals, we were just outfitted in shorts and sneakers and had packed one granola bar and two water bottles. The Korean bystanders looked on in horror as our youngest fearlessly scurried up boulders. And when we reached the summit, the locals let out a cheer and handed us congratulatory popsicles. As we've traveled, we've always tried to be local wherever we've lived instead of being a tourist. The idea is that we want to contribute to and take care of each home, no matter how long it is home for us. That's meant volunteering in Hawaii and New York and Houston, scouts in Switzerland and Germany and the US, shopping primarily at farmers markets, learning to compost, riding bikes instead of getting rental cars, and making friends everywhere we've gone. The Earth isn't a very large place, and it's people, not things, that make the difference in life and home. Oxford defines home as a place where one permanently lives, a place where something flourishes, your own ground, the correct position, a place to return to by instinct. And next year, we're on another adventure. For the first time, we're going to try and have home here in Houston for an entire and uninterrupted year. This is the place we returned to by instinct. I once spoke with Reagan in the narthex about the word home and the power of language and naming places for ourselves. In our family, we call each place we are staying home, even if it's only for one night. Not the hotel or the Airbnb or even the campsite, the beach. Home is where you are with me. James Baldwin called home an irrevocable condition. We share this planet, this community, and it may seem like a dire situation because climate change is spiraling out of control, and the world's governments aren't even coming close to making the kind of change that could save our planets before it's too late. Just this week, the UN reported that over 1 million animal and plant species are at risk for extinction. And as humans continue to destroy the Earth and its creatures, we also continue to destroy each other. But on my travels, I often find that people are more capable of kindness than I expect. And there are signs for hope for our Mother Earth. According to the International Renewable Energy Agency, renewable energy now accounts for 1/3 of the global power capacity, and that number's rising. Tree planting drones have successfully planted thousands of saplings in Miramar, and they're about to deploy again. There's a great green wall that's being built across the entire width of Africa. It's only about 15% completed, but it's already bringing back life to the area by way of jobs and food and animal habitats. And when it's completed, it will cover almost 6,000 miles across and will be the largest living structure on the planet, 3 times the size of the Great Barrier Reef. The largest ocean cleanup in history is going on in the Pacific Ocean, cleaning up the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Researchers believe that the 50% of the patch can be cleaned up in 5 years, and the entire process is carbon neutral. And many people in this room might also be happy to learn that there is now biodegradable body glitter. Our sacred stories invokes the image of God leading us with the leading strings of human kindness. However far or near you may travel on this Mother Earth, and whomever may join you on your journey, may you be led by human kindness, and may you know that you are home.